I really enjoyed this one. I interview a lot of people, mainly football players, mainly coaches, mainly people writing about or talking about football players and coaches, but rarely do I get a chance to interview comedians. And Jenny Johnson is a very successful comedian. She is on weekly in Los Angeles at the Improv and the Comedy Store. And if you can play at those places and go do stand-up comedy at those places, you're talented. You're really, really talented. And she's got that. But you might be asking yourself, hey, Drew, why are you talking to me about a comedian in Los Angeles? Well, she's a massive Houston Texans fan. She has been from day one. Before that, huge Oilers fan. She's also been an Astros fan. We cover all of that. We talk about her kind of journey into comedy because she didn't do that initially. She didn't just go to college and then pop out and start going on stage and telling jokes. Took a while. She took a circuitous path there, and it's a pretty cool one. So we discuss a little bit about that. We talked about her favorite Texans, who she goes to games with when she does go to Texans games, and you're gonna be pretty impressed with that. At least I was. And you will be too, because you and I were kind of similar in that regard. We both love the Texans, and we both love hearing about people who love the Texans. So buckle in and enjoy this podcast I did with Jenny Johnson. You can catch her at Jenny Johnson HI5. So that's Jenny Johnson High Five on Twitter, Instagram. And if you're in LA, go by the Comedy Store, go by the Improv and watch her. She's toured with comedians like Nick Swardson, among others. And we talk a little bit about that and some of the other acts she's been on the road with. She comes home to Houston quite a bit, and we need to get her back here for a game and a comedy show, because if you do, you'll laugh. Because I laugh at her every day at the stuff she says on Twitter and Instagram, and this was just a whole lot of fun. But I begin things off with a very basic question. Jenny, how the heck are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me on. I feel so special.
You're one of my favorites. My wife, Vita, she says hello, by the way. You're one of her favorites.
Oh, I follow her on Instagram.
Yep. So at Jenny Johnson, HI number five, at Jenny Johnson, high five. That's where you follow her on social media. And I mentioned the comedian stuff. Okay. Every week in LA, you're at the Comedy Store, you're at the Improv. I mean, if you want to be somebody in the comedy world, you're performing at those places and you're doing it on a weekly basis. And I want to talk a lot about your comedy in a little bit, but let's rewind. How and why are you a Texans fan? You're obviously from Bay City, which is close to Houston, but when did you become a fan? And
I mean, I've been a sports fan my whole life, like diehard sports fan. My parents, like when my sister and I were kids, I mean, I can't tell you how many pictures of us wearing Love You Blue, fully decked out. We had, you know, like, I mean, you know, old school, you know, Earl Campbell, Warren Moon, Van Pastor, like old school. And then, of course, we had to wander aimlessly around for years with no NFL team.
It was weird.
It was weird. And you know, Oilers fans were not going to go, oh, we'll just support the Cowboys. Like, no, you can't. And then, oh, the New Orleans Saints. No, I don't want to do that either. Finally, in 2002, we get the Houston Texans.
You and I are kind of in a similar age bracket. You talk about it being a weird time. Yeah, you talk about it being a weird time being without football. It was also, that's just a weird time in a person's life, that college transitioning into out of college, or just, you know, transitioning into adulthood, quote unquote. And then on top of that, 9/11 was going on. So there was a lot swirling in those days, and the Texans coming up with the name and so on and so forth was a big, big deal. And then it, went the way.
I remember they like one of the choices there was like in the Chronicle, they listed choices, and I was like, please steer clear of like natural disaster mascot.
No hurricanes.
Flooding, no nothing like that. But the sickest I think that I ever felt was this past football season, watching the Tennessee Titans and Houston Oilers uniforms. Did that personally upset you as much as it, like,
it was weird. It was really, really weird. I mean, I'm like you. I mean, no, heart was broken about four different times in about 80 different ways by those run and shoot Oilers. I don't remember the Love You Blue ones because I was a little kid, but man, I was all in with Warren Moon and all those guys. And man, they would come up with creative ways to lose. And just like no woman could ever break my heart the way the Oilers did. And so it was
the angriest really I ever saw, the angriest I remember ever seeing my dad. And my dad, rest in peace, he was the calmest person like in the world. Like his way, if my sister and I were like, this, like we're arguing in our room, he would just walk in and go, hey, come on now. And then turn around and leave when we would be like, whoa, dad just laid into us. Oh my God. But he just gave us the business, you know? But my dad and I are sitting there watching Houston Oilers game. And my sister just decided, like, in her, you know, whatever, junior high, she's all sassy. And she stands in front of the TV. And my dad and I are already, and I'm when I tell you what game it is, you'll know, already on edge here. It was that Bills game.
Yeah.
And my sister goes, ha, 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 go Bills. And my dad just took her by her hand and walked her outside and locked the door and locked all the doors in our house. And she just kept going, hey, y'all, it's not funny. It's not funny.
He showed her.
I'm like, we're in here having our hearts broken. Yeah. Legendary comeback from the Bills, and you're go Bills. My dad was like, nope, no, I don't think so.
I know you were a news producer for television at one juncture, but what were you doing for the first Texans game, the 1910 win over the Cowboys, week one of 2002? What were you at the game? Were you working? What were you doing?
I was at the game, actually.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I went to the game. I was living in, so I graduated from Sam Houston State University.
Mm-hmm. You and Dan Rather, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my ties to Dan Rather are so funny because I was born in Wharton, Texas. So that's where he's from.
Mm-hmm.
I got my broadcast journalism degree from Sam Houston. That's where he went. The building was the Dan Rather Communications Building. Yeah. And then I also worked at Channel 13 in Houston, which is where he once worked.
Wow.
So I'm like, I don't know how we're not best friends at this point.
He probably liked you.
I think Dan and I would probably get along pretty well.
Yeah.
But after I graduated, I moved to Austin, and I was working at, I did my internship in Austin at Fox 7 in the sports department.
Okay.
And then I ended up working there like after my internship was up. And so I was in Austin working at Fox 7 and started doing like sports producing.
Yeah.
And then I went over to, I was there for a few years, went over to KSAT 12 in San Antonio.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing. And then I just, you know, like working in sports, as you know, is so much fun.
Yeah.
It's like working in a toy store. I could look at the news department and go, God, they're not having as much fun as we're, you know, we're throwing a Nerf football. But I just didn't see like any. And by the way, on this side, the whole time I was doing this, I was like writing like freebie, like funny columns and different freebie magazines around Austin.
Uh-huh.
Or, you know, I was doing comedy on the side my own little way.
Yeah.
And then I decided I just didn't have room to grow as a sports producer because I wasn't at the time, you know, my 20s, and I wasn't thinking about moving anywhere. I'm like, well, where, you know, as a sports producer in local news, you just get to be a sports producer. You don't grow to a senior executive, you know? And I thought the room to grow would be in news. So I made the switch over to doing news producing. And I worked I did that for a bit at KSAT 12. And then I moved to Houston, worked at KPRC for a short period of time, and then got hired on at Channel 13.
Okay.
And then after that, I was like, and let's go be a comedian now after 13 years.
And I'm going to get into that. I want to get into that. But the 0-2 game, what was your, take me back to that. Cause I had to watch it from an apartment with my buddies in Dallas, and it was awesome, but I can't imagine what it must have been like being there as a fan.
It was so funny. Cause the thing that stuck out the most with me was like all the fans, everyone had the crispiest, brand newest t-shirts.
Yep.
Nobody had anything they could pull out of their closet from back in the day. It was like, you know, everyone's got brand new gear on. And it was so exciting. And also to go into, which at the time was a Reliant Stadium. I remember going in the vivid memory too, especially was pulling up and seeing how much that stadium completely dwarfed the Astrodome.
It's still jarring. It's still jarring to me. And I work here. It's weird.
Yeah. Because the Astrodome was the biggest thing in the world to me when
yes,
I was a kid. Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, the eighth wonder of the world. Like, we went to so many Astros games. We constantly went to Astros games. I had a baseball glove that my dad would, you know, take my sister and I, and we would, you know, take our gloves and go down when they're warming up,
right,
and get autographs on our gloves. I mean, I played softball with a glove that had like Billy Hatcher, Glenn Davis, Alan Ashby.
Yes.
And then randomly I got Pete Rose's autograph, and he was the nicest guy, which I never thought. He has such an a-hole face. Just resting a-hole face, you know, like he just looks like a jerk, but he was the sweetest guy. And I remember I played softball with a glove, and all those autographs eventually wore off. But
yeah,
but going there was just as a kid, I mean, my eyes were just huge. I couldn't believe.
Yeah.
And then cut to 2002, and I walk by, I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
That unbelievable. But that stadium, I have to say, is one of my favorites. I love the retractable roof. I don't know why football teams build new stadiums without that. I know the whole Cowboys thing, leaving the roof open, but when it's the weather's crap.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be nice to be able to.
Works for me. Yeah.
I'm like, when I see those, like, I'm sure, you know, when I was a sports reporter, I went to a lot of, you know, all the games, you know, and watching people, like, I'm covering some New England Patriots game or some Green Bay Packers, and the fans are just sitting there getting hypothermia.
Yeah. Oh, the Chiefs game, that was right after this year's playoff game for the Texans when they thumped the Browns. Yeah, there's people that are, they've lost, like, appendages because of the hypothermia.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Watch a football game.
Yeah. So that was the first game you went to. What's the last Texans game you were at?
It's been a while.
Yeah, because you've been in L.A.
No, I didn't go to the game in L.A. I think the one, it was before COVID. Because, you know, it's been a few years. Yeah, I haven't been able to get back there. But usually when I go, I always go with my buds, Rich O'Toole, who's a country singer.
Uh-huh.
Houston, and then Bun B and his wife Queenie will go.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. those are my football watching buds.
Those are good people to be buddied up with. Yeah. And yeah, you're going to eat well if you're with Bun B. Tell me you've had a Trill Burger.
Oh, I had a Trill Burger. I was doing shows. I was at the Houston Improv. Me and Nick Swartzen. That's who we were.
Awesome.
I toured with him. And one of the days, like, we had two shows Friday, two shows Saturday, one show on Sunday. But that Sunday afternoon, it was in September, and Bun had this whole Trill Burger event at the, like, the, you know, downtown at the courthouse. And I'm like, I'm going to get a Trill Burger. And that was one of the best burgers I've ever had in my life. Like, no lie.
It really is. And I'm partial. Obviously, I'm buddies with Nick Scherfield, but.
Oh, I'm buddies with Nick Scherfield, too. I love
him. Yeah. And I mean, when I had that for the first time, I was like, holy cow. And then we just went to the rodeo. Or the carnival at the rodeo a couple weeks back.
Oh, did you get the barbecued one?
No, we just got the Trill Burger, like just the regular one.
But I saw at the rodeo that they did something with, like,
they've got a tricked up one. Yeah, I didn't get a chance because I had my kids. We had our kids with us, and so we just wanted them to have it for the first time. And my son, we got a 10-year-old, and he'll eat anything. He can eat like an elephant, and literally he could eat a whole elephant, is what I'm saying. And he just downed this Trill Burger. He's like, Daddy, that was really good. So
every time I've even seen, like, I follow, you know, that Trill Burger account on Instagram, and I love when Bonner, like, somebody's taking a picture of, you know, taking a video, like, Drake came in, look at, like, all these celebrities are, you know, stopping by.
Yeah.
And they can't even get a good video because everyone's halfway done with the burger before they hit record.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a good thing. That's a good thing. It shows.
Yeah. Those burgers are.
Product.
Legit good. I have had a Trill Burger. But going to a Texans game with Bun B is like walking around with the biggest celebrity in the world. Like, just walk around the stadium. Literally, he's like the unofficial mayor of Houston.
No, it's been fun. I mean, he's always been a fan. And then now he's, you know, he's selling his burgers at the game.
Yeah.
Which makes it even better. And he's helped out the Texans with a lot of things as far as voicing some videos, and there's going to be changes with the uniform. He's been involved with that. So it's been pretty cool.
Yeah, he has. And they make all their, like, Trill Burger merchandise, you know, with the colorways for each team. Like, he's done so well. And he's just also just the nicest guy. And I know, like, Paul Wall, he does a bunch of stuff.
Okay, favorite Texan ever is?
Oh, I got to go with JJ. He's my bud, too. JJ and I, like, I met all those guys, like, because I feel so old now. Like, now all the guys that I knew when I would, like, come up to training camp, And I, you know, like a radio interview, or like I hung out with those guys like JJ and TJ Yates and Connor Barwin and Owen Daniels.
Yeah.
Aaron Foster is a good buddy of mine. Like, and now I'm like, I thought I was, you know, I was older than them then. Now I feel really old. They're all retired.
It's weird how time marches on in that way with them.
Oof. Yeah. Like, oh, look, but I can't tell you this. I mean, I would say JJ is easily my favorite Texan, not only just because he's my buddy, but what he does, what he did on the field was, you know, above and beyond incredible. Yeah. But what he did off the field, even more so, truly is a person who gave back to the community and then some. And I have nothing but respect for JJ. I think he's a good guy and he really did a lot for the team.
Okay. Now, as somebody who's legitimately funny, how impressed are you with what he's been able to do going on and hosting Saturday Night Live, doing what he's doing as far as the movies? I mean, that's no small accomplishment hosting that show, right?
No, it's not. And he did a great job. I mean, that's something that, but JJ is also someone that he's game for anything. He doesn't mind like being the butt of a joke. He's fun. Like, he has such a good personality. It didn't surprise me in any way, shape or form that he was going to be in the booth some point post playing, because his, you know, he just has that thing. He's got that charisma that he can, you know, and his knowledge of football is of course impeccable. So also, I just right now, I can't wait to talk with you about how excited I am about this team right now.
I mean, the only thing I can compare it to Texans-wise was after the 11 season when Schaub was hurt, obviously, and the Texans still go on the run. And then that offseason, because it's like, well, Schaub's coming back. What happens when we have you know, we have a real quarterback in Schaub? Look at what happens.
Yeah.
And then they storm out to an 11-1 start. I remember, dude, the sun set on Thanksgiving Day and the Texans were 10-1. I mean, that's one of that ever. And then, you know, the stumbles happen in December and then the next year. But this is even more promising than that, because CJ Stroud played the whole year and he's
and then
only going
to
the second
year. Signing that just happened with Stephon Diggs.
Yeah, the trade was just like, how pumped are you?
I'm so pumped because, you know, as a diehard Houston Texans fan, we've endured a lot. It's been a long journey. Like, these past few years have been,
like,
you know, just a nightmare. Like, if you see, you know, like, I'm watching a game on TV and the stadium's not even full. People are still wearing their JJ jerseys because they don't know what else to do. He's gone. The one time I really, like, damn near lost my faith in the team was that DeAndre Hopkins trade where they traded him for, like, a high five.
And not even a Jenny Johnson high five, but, like, a high five.
Yeah.
Right.
It was, like, the worst. I couldn't believe it. And even circling back to when the Titans were in those Houston Oilers uniforms, and to see DeAndre Hopkins in a Houston Oilers uniform playing for Tennessee, I'm like, I'm still sick over that.
Yeah.
I can't believe that happened.
It's tough.
And so when I watched the you know, the draft last year, and, you know, obviously I had a feeling it was going to be CJ Stroud. That was the obvious pick. But when they got the third pick, they traded around and got
Will Anderson.
The second and third pick, and those two have been on fire. And then to get Tank Dell, and I'm glad, you know, he'll be healthy.
Yeah.
And then stuff. I'm just like, it's truly. And then I love one of my buddies that still is on the team is John Wheat.
Yes. Snapper. Yes.
Yeah. He's still my old bud hanging in there.
How impressive is that? Like, the dude, he signed in 2010 in the offseason. Think about that. I mean, we hadn't even been to the playoffs yet, and he's played in every playoff game. He's played in every game since that 2010 preseason game number one. All the stuff that guy has seen. It's remarkable.
It's remarkable. He sent me, he's so nice. He sent me one of his, like a game jersey of his that he signed for me.
That's cool.
Yeah. I'm like, I had that. I'm just walking around in this giant jersey with my fingers crossed, hoping that the team gets it together. And then I will say that to me, the biggest signing that I was so, like, beyond excited was D'Amico Ryans. Coach Ryans has, I swear, it's, I don't know how much, you know, I know it's talent, but with the team, but I think so much of it is him as a coach. He's next level good. I'm so glad that the McNairs, like, took a shot with him, first year head coach, and just, he should have been coach of the year.
Jenny, a lot of people listening to this have no recollection of him as a player here. Like, you know, they're just so young that they don't remember that. But it resonates so much with people like you and me who saw him play. And I've said this many, many times. The day he signed to be the head coach of the Texans, it was like mouth-to-mouth resuscitation for this franchise. Everything then, there's been like a golden touch. I mean, everything just, it was like a 180 in every single degree. Yeah. And it's been awesome. And it's not surprising. It's so fun. It's unprecedented. But it's not surprising if you saw any of what he did as far as being a leader, being a really great player. I mean, he was a hell of a player when he was here.
Oh, he came in.
He wasn't even
player.
The first defensive player drafted in that draft by the team. Yet he took that defense by the throat and was the leader of all leaders. And now he's doing what he's doing as a head coach. It's been so much fun.
You know, J.J. Watt actually said that, like, his rookie year, J.J.'s rookie year, that, you know, he had moved to Houston, never been here, whatever. And he just was like, went to D'Amico to say, like, where do you live? And he goes, I, like, bought a house across the street from D'Amico because if it was good enough for D'Amico, then it must be a good place to live. Like, he did that based on just how much respect and appreciation he had for D'Amico Ryans. So I love that story. It was so funny. He just bought a house. He's like, I didn't know where to go. Houston's sprawling. It's big. What neighborhood? Whatever. I'll just go to D'Amico.
That's a good, it's a good barometer. No doubt.
Yeah.
You're a comedian. When did you make the switch and decide I'm going to go all in? Because that's a bold choice. That is hard to do. It's not an easy thing.
It was a bold choice. And it was like, so my dad passed away in like 2012. And I had been getting some, through Twitter, getting some notoriety. I had a bunch of followers and I was, but I was still like working in news. I wasn't, but I wanted to make a switch because I had gotten through Twitter, I got an agent, a manager, I write as well. So I even sold a pilot to ABC, but I was able to, I was doing this while being in Houston. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like after my dad, like he had cancer, he passed away. And I just thought, you know, life's too short. I'm going to just go for it. I can move to LA. I can try this. If it doesn't work, I've got like 13 years experience working in news. Mm-hmm. I have something I could fall back on. So let me just give this a shot. So I moved out here to LA and I was still writing. And then I just was like, I'm writing all these jokes, but I wonder how it would be if I told them on stage instead of just, you know, and because of like having social media, like popularity, I was able to like get spots. Like the first set I did was at the Laugh Factory on Sunset Boulevard. They're like, oh, Jenny Johnson, high five. Yeah, you could come do a set. I didn't even want to say that I'd never done stand up before.
Sure.
I was just trying to like fake it till you make it, you know?
So and I remember they said, come do it. Were they like 5 minutes, 10 minutes? What did they ask you to do?
I did 10. They were like, you have 10 minutes. I was like, cool. All right. And so I just practiced, and I get on stage and it was good. Like, I have to say, like, it was, I had the crowd, whatever. And I remember I got off stage and I saw, my friend Neil Brennan. He was going up to later and he's just, was watching. He goes, I'd never seen the full Jenny Johnson stand-up experience. And I was like, nobody else has. That was my first time doing it. And he goes, oh, can I give you one little piece of advice? I was like, sure. He goes, yeah, I would look up. You looked at your feet the whole time. He's like, just, I mean, I don't want to tell you how to live your life, sure, but maybe look up.
Do you remember that?
You
like, were you looking at your feet? Or
it only was because like looking out into the, you know, when you're on stage, you can just see the front row. The lights are so bright. And I didn't want to see anyone. And instead of just doing a thing where you just look out into the darkness and that's what you're, you know, like nobody can tell that you can't see the breath. But instead, I was just standing on stage, staring at my shoes, telling my dumb jokes. And it got wet. But he was like, hey, just give you a piece of advice. Yeah, okay. Look up. All right. Duly noted, sir. Thank you. All right. I will do that.
Well, it sounds like it went well. I mean, what was the nervousness like? I mean, how nervous were you?
I still get nervous, but I get nervous right before I walk on stage. Mm-hmm. And then once I grab the microphone, I'm not nervous anymore. Like, I'm totally fine, but there's just like, and I like it because it's like excited butterflies, you know, like I don't, you know, like there are some days when I'm getting ready and if I'm like headlining a show, I was headlining a weekend of shows at the DC Improv, and I was staying with my cousin Brad, who lives there in the area. And right before my first show, I'm like walking around his house. I was like, had my AirPods in. I'm like listening to my set. He's like, "Oh, you getting nervous?" I go, "This is the part right now where I'm questioning every decision I've ever made in my life. Why I think that I can do 6 shows this whole weekend. This is where I want to quit and just go home. I'm like, it'll come back around, but this is the moment where I have that. Like, the thing with like doing stand up too is like, because now I've been at it for, I guess, I don't know, almost not 10 years, but getting close to 10 years. And I've been able to go on the road with so many great comics, and they've let me like, you know, feature for them. So I could do like a half hour set. I'm going with like Nick Swartz and Anthony Jeselnik, Fortune Themester, Brad Williams. So like, it's cool just to be, Leanne Morgan, who's one of my dear friends. She's brought me on the road with her. The only tough thing with Leanne Morgan is she's from Knoxville, Tennessee, and she does not use language on stage. And she's like, Jeannie. I'm like, okay, so I have to sit there and make a conscious effort not to curse.
Oh, you've got to tailor your act a little bit depending on, yeah, okay. Okay.
Yeah, it's not my act so much, because I don't do things where, like, I know a lot of, like, the common theme with people think all female comics talk about sex, which I don't. I just, right. I like observational humor. Uh-huh. And, but I also just have a potty mouth where I'm like, well, look at this oven guy. Look at, you know, like, I, it's just how I talk. And then I have to have this conscious thing in the back of my head going, don't say that.
Because she brings her crowd that's kind of following. Yeah, you don't want to offend them.
When someone brings you on the road, you're performing for that audience that bought tickets to see them, you know. And I remember one time Anthony Jeselnik, we were having dinner one night, and I was going to open at the Mirage in Las Vegas for Nick Swartzen. And at that point, that was like the biggest show I was going to be doing, like, ever at that point, thousands of people. And I told Anthony that I was nervous, and he goes, well, let me just tell you, no one bought a ticket to see you. Like, ouch.
Right.
Okay. And he goes, so if you do great, great. If you do bad, they bought a ticket to see Nick, not you.
Like, is it kind of a little liberating though, hearing that a little bit?
Like, it was, because that's how I, like, that's how my parents would talk to me about things. Like, they're like, so weirdly, that was like, oh my God, thank you. But then I thought about it. I was like, that's so funny that he's like, no one bought a ticket to see you. Jenny.
That's not bad.
Okay. Like, good point. And then I told Nick that, and Nick was laughing. He goes, yeah, I mean, my fans are like, they're always up for a good time. He's like, hell, try new stuff when you're on stage. I'm like, yeah, no, I don't think this will be the time that I'm going to bust out some new material in front of thousands of people. Let me just go with the bits that I know work. I try out new material in front of smaller crowds, not thousands of people.
So you were just here, you said, in the last fall in Houston, performing. Mm-hmm. Like, how much have you performed here?
A lot. A lot of people will bring me along when they do the Houston Improv, just because I'm, you know, I have so many people, and I can, a lot of people will buy tickets just because I have so many friends in the area and everything. So I've performed there quite a bit. I even did one headlining show. It was like it was like the Wednesday before Hurricane Harvey, or like 2 days before.
Oh, wow.
Hurricane Harvey. And I remember like flying out. There's my mom is still in Bay City. My sisters and brother-in-law and nephew, they're in like the Conroe area. And I'm like, I'm getting out of here. Bye.
Yeah.
Y'all don't float away. Bye. I'm going home.
Did Bay City get it pretty badly during that one?
It looked like, you know, as it always does, it looks like it's going to hit that area. And then right when it makes landfall, it takes a turn and goes further. So my sister had gone, and she picked up my mom. And as it turns out, like, at least my sister, they didn't lose power or anything, but my sister and brother-in-law had to have my mom there for like a week because like she didn't have power at her house, like the neighbors did. I just remember like every day talking to my sister, and it was truly one of the funniest things of like calling, hey, how's it going?
I kind of think you tweeted about this, right? You were tweeting about this at the time.
It
sounds familiar.
It was entirely. And then I kept like making it worse, telling my brother-in-law and my sister, I go, what if when you go to take her back home, what if the house is just gone? It was washed away. And then she'll have to live with you. And they're like,
Jenny,
don't even
cut it out, Jenny.
Don't
Stop
even joke.
That.
They're like, if you think that's funny, I'm like, I actually do think it's pretty funny.
Gosh.
You just left and abandoned us. I'm like, yeah, I did. I totally got on a plane. I'm off, y'all. In Harvey.
So what's next for you? What's next for you comedy-wise?
Comedy-wise, I'm still plugging away. I'm going to record in the end of the summer, beginning of the fall, I'm going to record my first album. So that's
congratulations. That's awesome. That's so cool.
Yeah, I got to come up with a name for it. So I've just been really, really trying to focus on getting that, you know, that hour special, because it takes so long. Once you have, you know, you have to get up on stage almost every night to work out your material. And there's things are always changing, because I, you know, you want to keep things topical as well. So I have to be in the know of whatever ridiculous news is going on.
Mm-hmm.
Steer clear of politics. No one wants to hear that. That's a big thing. But I watch people still try to get on the stage and talk politics. I'm like, no one wants to hear it. Get off the stage.
By doing comedy now, for, you know, doing stand-up for the last decade, is there a part of you that feels bulletproof as far as I can do anything if I can get up and do that and do it well?
It definitely gives you like more, it's just, I don't know. It's kind of a weird feeling, because I think before I ever did it, in my head what I thought it was going to be. And then when I get up there, I'm like, I'm in the zone. I know my whole, you know, however many minutes, because you never know when you go do stand-up shows around town, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. Sometimes people will grab you. You know, there's three rooms in the Comedy Store. There's two rooms in the Improv. I could be doing a show in one room, and then maybe the booker goes, hey, somebody can't make it. Can you run up and do 5 minutes? And you're like, yeah, but I just, in my head, I have 5 minutes, 7 minutes, 10 minutes, 15. I can do an hour. But I just see it so much. It's like with anything where people think, you know, like, oh, you have the most fun job, and then it becomes a job. You know, like that's no different. But I just stay so zoned in on, like, make sure I have my phone that's on, you know, there's always a bar stool on stage. I put my phone, I hit my voice memo, record it, and do my set, get done, you know, hit unrecord, okay, save it, and then I go home, and then I listen to it, and I make notes. If I did, you know, it's still, it's a job, but it's a job that I love so much. Like, it's just fun to be able to, like, especially after being a news producer, where you feel like you're the person who is only giving bad news to people. Constantly, you know, I'm like, okay, off the top, what do we got? Who? Oh, apartment fire, Southwest Houston. Here we go. All right, let's do it.
Yeah. Now you're like the UPS like, delivery guy at Christmas, right? I mean, everybody loves Santa.
Yeah, exactly. It's like,
or Santa Claus.
Now
hell, that's a better.
Yeah, I get to be the person that makes people happy, come to a show, and they have fun. I'm like, I also really enjoy the thing of, like, you know how it is with people when sometimes out here in LA, as you can imagine, I could be standing in a comedy club and I haven't gone on yet, and somebody will come by and they're kind of like, who are you? Excuse me, rude. And then I get on stage and I kill. And then the person will be like, oh, hey, I didn't realize that you were a comic. That was really...
Now, how graceful are you with them? Do you go back at them? How graceful are you with that, in that situation?
No, I just act like I have a chip on my... I'm like, oh, thank you. That's really nice of you. What's your name? Uh-huh. Okay. Nice to meet you. You know, I'm like, I remember. I hold grudges. You're not going to... I remember that face. But I do, like, there is something that I really enjoy about that, like, proving, you know, when somebody's like, yeah.
You're a competitor. You're a competitor.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, lifelong sports fan. I played sports, so I always want to... I want to be the best. I want to get the biggest laughs. And but I also love... when I was talking about, like, how much fun it is working in sports, it's so much fun to, like, just chill in the green room with other comics. It's just a funny... It's a funny atmosphere. There's nobody that... There's no human resource person.
Right. That's going to storm in.
And go, wait, that was inappropriate. You're like, no. It's a free-for-all. It's a good time. Everybody has a good time.
Forgot to ask you, funniest Houston Texan ever is or was?
The funniest?
Yeah, because you know a lot of them.
Arian Foster always made me laugh because he just did his own thing. I'm going to be vegan for a while. You can't be an NFL running back.
Right.
And a vegan. That didn't work. I remember he gave a post-game interview one time, and he just did it in a British accent.
Yep.
Never addressed
it. I was there for that one. That was interesting.
He just, like, doing quirky, weird things always made me laugh. Connor Barwin, yes. I always liked it. He always made me laugh.
His pal Sean Cody, pretty funny. He's out in L.A. too. He's got some...
Yes, but Sean Cody and Connor together were very funny.
Oh, yeah. That was a good tandem.
They were big BFFs. But yeah, no, I would say Owen Daniels also, he always had a good sense of humor. But of course, anyone that, like, I became friends with, it all started because they started following me on Twitter.
You want to feel really old? We'll go circle back to that. So last night, we had my son's 8-year-old baseball team had a game at 7:30. And on the field we were about to play, Owen Daniels was pitching to his son's team. Because it's coach pitch baseball. And so I saw that and I was just like, wow, we are old. Yeah.
He's coaching the team.
Yeah, he's coaching this team. He's slimmed down, and he's throwing the ball to eight-year-olds. And yeah, but it was nice seeing him.
You want to talk about Owen Daniels? Talk about a clutch tight end.
With the Texans, with the Ravens for that year, and then with the Broncos,
he got a Super Bowl. Yeah. He deserved to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, greatest tight end easily in Texans history. So
he was so good. Just something like, yeah, anytime the ball was like heading his way, you just like, I had all the confidence every time.
Yep.
You know, he's awesome. Real deal. Like
indeed.
That guy.
Indeed. All right. So let's wrap this up. Well, what were you going to say?
I also love that. I can't believe that I know is Brian Cushing.
You talk about competitors.
Oh my God. I follow him, and like his kids are going to be like, when they're older.
Yeah.
I'll see like a video of him playing little league, football. And I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. Oh, it's something. It's something to see for sure. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. But the other parents are probably like, oh, great. Here comes Cushing. And Tanner is knocked out. There it is. Whoops.
Tanner, good name. Okay, we got to wrap this up, sadly. But Jenny Johnson, when's the next Texans game you're going to go to? There's like a ton of great ones this season in Houston, on the road too. But you need to come out.
Yeah, I'm going to make it a point to get to one of those games for sure. I'm not sure which one, but hopefully, are they out here?
No, they're not going west this year. It's all central and east.
Yeah, I'll make it a point to fly back to Houston and go because I have to see it. Like I'm so stoked. I have my CJ Stroud T-shirt. I'm like all
there. You go.
This company that sponsors me with a lot of my stuff is Homage.
Yes, they're awesome. Yes.
And they even sent me a Chester Pitts T-shirt.
Nice. That's great.
Yeah. They sent me all sorts of cool gear.
Well, Jenny Johnson, you can find her on social media at Jenny Johnson HI5, at Jenny Johnson HI5. You can see her regularly in Los Angeles at the Comedy Store, at the Improv. She's got an album coming out next fall, and it's going to kick all the ass in the world. Jenny, it's awesome talking with you. I really, really love this. I appreciate you making time. I know how busy your schedule is, and we can't wait to do this again sometime. We can't wait to see you at a Texans game. Sound good?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Big thanks to Jenny Johnson. I know a lot of you out there listening live in Los Angeles. Go take a moment. Check her out at the Comedy Store, at the Improv, and get ready for that big album, which I can't wait to hear and can't wait to see when it's unveiled later next year, maybe even at the end of this year, but she's going to shoot it late summer, early fall. And best of luck to her, and congratulations on all of that. All right, till then, so long.